Hey there, true believers. Welcome to another Muddy... Oh, wait, this isn't the Muddy Marvel podcast. What is this? Oh, Superhero Speak. Oh, yeah, you're with Dave, Ben, and John. I'm Jeff Sutter. I'm Senior Art Director of Marvel Comics, and you are listening to Superhero Speak.
Here we go.
On air handsomeness.
Yes, exactly. And we're rolling, guys.
Excellent. Yeah, you're the one that's going to get all the female email and, you know, what does he look like?
Yes.
Hello, ladies.
Yes, we'll tell everyone you look like a hobbit. Oh, wait, no, we don't want to say that.
That would be accurate. No, we don't want that. Yeah.
Then again, depending on the people that listen to this, that might be a turn-on, so.
Could be.
Yeah.
But Frodo or Baggins?
Have you been to Comic-Con?
Comic-Con? Ugh.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superheroes Speak, and that rhymes with geek. And I'm your host, Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And you might be wondering, hey, the intro sounded a little different this week. Well, that's why... that's because we are celebrating our one-year anniversary, and this is our anniversary special.
And it wouldn't be an anniversary special without Dave making mistakes in the recording already. But we're going to roll right through it.
Yeah. We'll act like that didn't happen.
No, we don't have to. It's fun. It keeps it interesting.
Does it?
I think it does.
Yeah, so what you just heard, well, the very beginning you heard an intro that was done for us by a special guest, one of our first guests, Jeff Sutter, who was, or is, the senior art director over at Marvel, and also the host of the Mighty Marvel podcast, and he did a play on his intro he did for the Mighty Marvel podcast for us, and then you heard the very first opening of the very first episode of Superhero Speak.
Ah, to be so young again, Dave.
Yes, there were better times. John was a little less of a curmudgeon.
Not very much.
You had, your beard was much shorter.
Yes, and I had my long, beautiful locks.
Yes.
Does that mean that you were less wise back then, too?
If I joined this podcast at that point in time, then yes. Yes, I was.
So, yes, so we have been doing this for a year now.
It feels like much, much longer.
is that really how it feels?
So what have we done with our year, Dave? Have we learned anything? Have we talked to anyone interesting over the past year? What do you think we've accomplished this past year?
What do I think we've accomplished this past year?
Yeah.
A lot of nonsense. A lot of good times. We've met a lot of interesting, got to talk to a lot of interesting people.
Yes, we have.
We've complained about a lot of movies and comic books.
That's true.
We've liked some.
I do think that we did definitely talk to some interesting people. I don't necessarily like to pick favorites per se, but there were definitely some conversations that were some of my favorites. The Jeff Sutter one was a lot of fun.
Yes.
The Eric Cooper Chinese dinner one was not listenable, but fun.
Yes. That was an interesting one. And, luckily, Eric was cool about it. And we did re-record with him. Well, I re-recorded with him at, Philly Comic Con last year.
Yep.
And, let's take a moment and listen to a moment from that interview.
At the same time, the fun part about, the guillotine is that I'm using the image of Ray Park.
Oh, okay.
He's been a fan of mine for a long, long time. And pretty much I want to actually tell him at this convention that he is actually the villain in the book. And I think he's going to get a kick out of it. But it's a fun character.
So Ray's going to be at the Underground Comic Con?
No, he's here at this Wizard World.
Oh, okay.
Or Philly.
Okay.
He's here. So right. I haven't seen him for at least for a good year or so because he was so busy doing G.I. Joe and stuff like that.
Yes.
So he hasn't really been doing cons until he just finally started doing the circuit again.
Right.
And I look forward to seeing him actually probably to the air tomorrow.
Okay.
And just surprise him and say, hey, Ray, guess what? You're in book three.
Right. Because as you mentioned in the last interview, and people might not be able to understand what you're saying, Ray is actually a fan of the novels.
Yeah, he actually is. Actually, when I did the first book, and the funny thing about it, I met him over at Pittsburgh. And, you know, I went to his table. I said, Ray, I like your work. I mean, I love your Darth Maul. That was just awesome. And, I mean, you're inspired a little bit of what the character can do because of Darth Maul. And I gave him one of the Night Secret books, the first volume. And once... And when I see him again at another convention, he called me over to his table and said, Eric, I want to talk to you. I said, hey, what's up? Dude, I like your book. It's pretty cool, pretty cool. I said, oh, thanks, Ray, you know. And after that, I just didn't think about it.
Right.
When book two came out, this was about 3 years ago, and I showed him, hey, Ray, guess what? Book two. And he said, Eric, come on over here. I got to talk to you. I said, wait, Ray, you got a whole full line in front of you. What's going on? He said, I don't care, man. We got to talk. I said, you got book two? I said, yes, I got book two. And, you know, and also the books that I do, they're caption novels.
Right.
So there are illustrations inside of each chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And also most of my artists from the book were actually here at the Wizard World.
Yes.
And he told me, look, Eric, I want you to bring all your artists over. I want to talk to all of them. So, I mean, actually took out time for me and also all my artists at one time, took out a block of his time to cater to us.
Cool.
And that was freaking awesome. He said, Eric, I didn't want to get your hopes up too high. That first book was amazing. And I didn't want to get you too high because I didn't want you to really get a big head. But your stuff is awesome. I love, and every time I see you, my family tells me, make sure you say hi to Eric and every time you see him.
Cool.
So that's always the mission of his.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a great clip?
That was one of my favorites.
Yes. You know,
just his opinions on those things were so solid, and I could relate to them very much so.
Well, you know, and also, you know, how about like when, you know, we talked about Jeff Sutter already, you know,
yeah.
And I loved when he talked to us about digital versus print and how he was still old school. Let's take a moment and listen to that.
Where do you feel like the digital is going? I mean, do you see them? Do you see like Marvel ever sunsetting the actual physical publishing, or you know, are you going to continue to try and monetize that and use that as a hook to get into the digital world, or vice versa?
Well, I think my personal opinion is that the publishing, I don't see publishing ending. I think people will always want. There will always be at least a fan base that will want a physical copy to bag and board, yeah, to be able to get signed, to hang on the wall. I mean, I'm guilty on that. You know, I have a few long boxes. I don't have a lot. You would think that I would have a lot, but at one point I probably had 20,000 comics, and I'm probably down to about maybe 5,000 now. You know, how many long boxes is that? Maybe what, 10? I don't even, it's minimal in its physical, but it's very select, and it's, I have a couple of good selections in there. I just think that will always exist, especially with renewable paper supply now, you know, and it's not like you can't even say that, you know, and the ink is better and it lasts longer and it's UV protected. And I just don't think that industry is going to go away. I think it absolutely is part of the genre. It will never not exist as far as I'm concerned. This is my personal opinion. But digital comics is what it is. It's giving everyone with a digital device an opportunity to be exposed to the Marvel Universe. Yeah. And that's ultimately the most important part. It exactly the same way that the movies do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the movie, does every person that goes see, you know, Wolverine go out and buy a Wolverine book? No, absolutely not. Do a bunch? Yes, they do.
Certainly.
And that drives a part of the publishing industry. And we support each other. You know, same way the animated series on, you know, Disney XD. You know, we're publishing Disney XD stuff. We're not doing it because, you know, people don't want it. We're doing it because people do want it.
Yeah.
And you know what? You don't always want to hand an iPad to a 6-year-old.
No, that's true.
There's something that's about a tangible, you know, comic book. It's still art. It's still storytelling. It's still, you know, it takes talented people to make these things. And art will always exist. The day it doesn't, you know, put me in a box.
Wiser words have never been said.
No. John, are you lost yet?
No.
It's a clip show thing.
Following along? No, I know exactly. Gee, that was a great clip that we just heard just now.
And how about that night we talked to Brimstone?
That one was definitely a fun time. It could have gone on much, much longer.
Yes, actually, it did go on much, much longer. I mean,
as I recall,
a very long conversation. We only shared an hour of it basically with everyone. He's a fun guy. He's
a man of many words.
He's a man of many words. Yes, and he loves his cookies.
Absolutely, and he definitely has he's got a good head on his shoulders. It was a good time.
Yeah. Yes, and his cookies, his barbecue sauce. But let's listen to how he started Brimstone Comics.
So then, you know, you took the character Brimstone and turned that into a comic. And, you know, and then thus it became a publishing company and it's grown substantially since you started it. You know, was that always your hope, you know, to not just make the character a comic book, but to have an entire company around it?
No way. No, I didn't want the company. You know, look, we did want the company. We wanted to do something, but we were expecting it to be just, you know, Brimstone, you know, Luscious, you know, Border Hounds related and spin-offs just from us. That's what we originally had planned. Now, you know, I look back and I go, well, you know, I guess I was stupid to ever think that because, you know, you gotta continue to build and branch out and so forth. And there are so many amazing creators out there that, you know, it would have been a shame for us to not do what we've been doing. Now, you know, taking it and breaking it out. And again, it happened by accident. You know, it was a couple of friends, you know, that we knew, you know, a couple of names, a couple of non-names, you know, hey, you know, you guys are doing a lot of great things. You guys are doing stuff. You guys are doing some really cool things. You know, can you guys represent us as well? I said, sure. Why not? We're doing this. We might as well do you also. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, and then a little bit further and we go, oh crap. Now we're going to have to incorporate. We're going to have to start doing some stuff here. So, you know, we built it out and, you know, now the, you know, Hound Comics Inc., Hound Entertainment Group, we have a bunch of different divisions. We have over 100 people that work with us, you know, in many different shapes and forms, from creators to office to what do you call to celebs. I mean, we do a ton of different things and, you know what? It could drive a brother crazy, but at the end of the day, it's well worth it. And, you know, I'm really happy with where it's going. You know, never would I have thought that we would have grown so quickly. You know what I mean? It's just great. It's really cool. So for something that I wasn't expecting to do, you know, this is where I'm at. And, you know, I'm enjoying it now. Again, it's a little crazy at times, but you know, I'm enjoying it.
Hey, that's all that matters, really. As long as you're having fun.
Yeah, you try. So, you know.
Oh, and I messed that up before the clip. It's not Brimstone, it's Hound Comics, everyone. But you heard Brimstone say that.
Nice.
So who else did we have on interesting this week, or this year,
yeah,
that we could show some clips for?
Well, another good one, you weren't there for, Ben, even though you were initially in the room and then got called out like you used to all the time.
I disavow any knowledge of that.
It was actually a friend of mine from the Philly area. Well, originally from Louisiana. He lives in Philly area now. It was J.G. Jones, the artist behind the Infinite Crisis storyline. Nice. And, you know, actually, though, you know, I never realized that he didn't do all the artwork. And, yeah, he told us that story about when he worked on that. Let's take a moment and listen to that.
Right. And have you ever found yourself in a situation where you haven't met a deadline?
Yeah. I mean, Final Crisis, it was a hugely disappointing thing for me because I was doing great on the deadlines and then I had an undiagnosed illness. I didn't find out until after the book I had basically failed on the book and had to have help come in to finish it up. I got a diagnosis afterwards, but I had no idea what was going on at the time. I was just exhausted and would pass out at the drawing table and wake up hours later. I mean, it was so that I don't even remember what the question was, but
about missing deadlines
and definitely intrude on deadlines, you know, and it happens to a lot of guys, not just your personal health. You have families, you know, things to take care of. Parents pass, you know, parents get sick and you have to take care of them. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things.
Well, I guess before we go any further, without prying too much, I hope you're okay now. Is that
Yeah. Everything's really cool now. It took a while to get everything straightened out, but now it's well managed and it's not like something I make a big secret of, but doing good now.
Well, that's good.
So, John, do you remember that interview?
A little bit.
It was so long ago.
So long ago.
We were so young and innocent then.
Young and innocent, yes.
Speaking so of full, the Joneses, so full though, of rage, but, yeah, and keeping up with them, you know what one I remember fondly was the Doug Jones interview.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that was cool because we learned a lot about Doug Jones. He's a man who's been in many movies, and yet people don't know his name, but they know his kind of know his face, even though he also wears a lot of makeup.
Yes, you rarely see his face.
But I think one of the roles he's most known for is being under the makeup in Silver Surfer. Would you agree with that?
I say that was a good one.
And one of the interesting things about Silver Surfer was that was not his voice. That was Lawrence Fishburne. But he had a very unique idea for the voice.
Let's hear about that.
Yeah. Why don't we hear about that from the man himself?
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, for this generation, you're definitely everyone, you know, you are our Abe Sapien.
Aw, well, thank you.
And so far, our Silver Surfer. Now, that was your own voice work, isn't that correct?
Oh, dear, it happened again. It was. But they had secretly been planning all, I mean, I say secretly from me. It had been in the works all along that Lawrence Fishburne would voice over me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounded a bit deeper than what I'm familiar of your voice work.
Right. Well, actually, when I did the Silver Surfer, I lowered my voice to hear anyway. And then I went back in. I also went in and did all of my ADR voice looping. And we went over all of my dialogue in this voice, like this. And we then went over it a second time with a whisper, like this. And when they ran them together, it was absolutely beautiful, amazing. And I wish they would have kept that sound. I love Lawrence Fishburne. I think he's a fantastic actor. But the sound we had created for The Surfer was something that would have made the Geek Boys wet themselves.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be a very unique sound.
Right, and not only that, it would help, I think, give it a more alien aspect.
Another otherworldly sound, exactly.
So that would have been cool, wouldn't it?
I would have watched that movie.
Yeah.
I think that would have been the difference between Fantastic Four 2 being a hit and a flop.
Yes.
And obviously we know which way it went.
Right. And then I think the one of the last guys we can talk about is the artist Steve Scott. But he actually, you know, when we first interviewed Steve, it was a great interview. He's full of life, a great guy to get to talk to. And then immediately after we had him on, we realized he had a partner that he was working with on a book, James Maddox, who has been our only three-peat guest on the show so far.
So far, yes.
He's an amazing writer. And they came back on together to talk about their book, Blue Nemesis. So it's a great project. They're currently working on it. The preview copy's out now. But why don't we listen to them talk about Blue Nemesis a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, having read the preview, first off, it's brilliant. Both from a writing and an art standpoint. And I'm kind of glad to hear that you two are in control because I have to imagine that that was the original concept and I wouldn't want to see that changed. You know, it's really well done. Now I feel like I have to say something here, because people who listen to this show know that I get down on dark comics, you know, comic books with a dark storyline. But I'm not down on dark comics. I'm down on when people take Superman and try to make him a dark character, or when they try to take, you know, somebody who's been classically the main good guy and humanize him to the point where he's breaking necks. Okay. But I love The Watchmen. I love The Killing Joke. I love stuff like that. So I will say that I love Blue Nemesis. It's an amazing story. And I find there's an homage to almost classic sci-fi in a way. And
oh yeah.
I was going to ask, was that an influence in there?
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as like the writing standpoint goes, like I definitely wanted that feel to it, but Steve is really the guy that made it actually happen and come off as far as the visual appeal of it was spot on. I cannot praise him enough for being so spot on. I like writing what I read, and the classic sci-fi stuff is definitely what I like to read.
But Dave's right. It does kind of track like an original Twilight Zone episode. It's got that kind of depth to it. I like it. You know?
Well, John, it's so funny. I mean, you know, when James and I were talking about what we really like, you know, we were talking about like, you know, what the subject matter would be on the story that we collaborate on. You know, we mentioned that, you know, we talked about Twilight Zone. We talked about, you know, that kind of concept of science fiction. And man, I tell you what, James, you know, thank you for what you said about me. But I mean, truthfully, man, I'm inspired by what I had in front of me. This is the best of the kind of science fiction that I like to read because it really deals with the people. It deals with the psychology. It deals with the idea of seclusion. It deals with the mental things that people would deal with. I mean, again, very Twilight Zone. And the preview that you guys have actually read, that you guys have seen, does not even yet get into the action yet. The stuff that would be on the big screen that they would say, oh, this is the killer scenes that we want to put in the trailer. Mm. You guys have still not even gotten to that point yet. James, the stuff that he's written is fantastic dealing with that, and I can't wait to get to that portion too. I already did a lot of design work for that, so I'm looking forward to it.
So you can see, people, that not only is this a fun and entertaining show, but we've learned a lot over the last year.
Yes, we have. And not only have we got to meet a lot of interesting people, we've actually become close to a bunch of people and had a couple of those interviewees turn into occasional co-hosts.
Co-host and interviewers, which has been strange. Just like when the three of us were on the podcast Nerd Unemployed, hosted by our friend Johnny Fournier, who was on our podcast as well. And for those who don't know Nerd Unemployed and missed out on that initial episode, it's all about video games and whatnot. But let's hear a little bit from Johnny now.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that you worked at Square Enix. What did you do over there?
You know, when I started, it was in QA.
Okay.
So I used to work at it's funny, I just did an episode with my buddy talking about the whole origin story, but
that's the one I haven't listened to yet.
Yeah. No worries. It's a long one. We thought we were going to talk for an hour and it was like 3 hours later. But I'm splitting them up. Yeah, I started out at GameStop and it was horrid. After a couple of years, it was EB back then, but yeah. It was pretty bad. And then my assistant manager was like, he would tell us tales about how awesome QA is, and he worked at Activision. And eventually, I got the gumption to apply to Square, and it was interesting because Square was always one of my favorite companies, and you couldn't find a bigger.
Yeah, they make some great games.
They really, yeah. And you at the time, you could not find a bigger Final Fantasy fan than me. I was so stoked. Nice. And I just applied for the QA job because it's entry level, and I got the gig. And I did that for about, God, like 6 years. And after about 6 years of testing games, it really dragged on me. So I went from, you know, being completely creatively suffocated in a job where all you do is play a game and report issues to marketing. And then I did that for about 4 years. And then unfortunately, most recently, they had a bunch of layoffs, and I was a part of that. So that's why I started my podcast.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it's funny because you can say QA to me and Ben, and we know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
we work together at a company called Point Roll, which does a lot of online advertising.
Sure.
You know, do you remember when you would go to Yahoo page and they had that Ford ad where the car drove out of the screen? That's us, or that was us.
Right.
Yeah. So if you have any issues with online advertising, blame Ben.
It's all your fault, Ben.
I just do what I'm told. I just make it work. Everyone else makes the decisions.
I am incredibly familiar with that motto.
You know, fun fact, he's actually employed now.
Yes, he is.
Another fun fact, right after that, I became unemployed.
Coincidence?
I think not. Oh, wow.
But another podcast friend that we've met along the way is Mr. Frank Duran.
Yes, yes. The host of Real Books Don't Have Batman. And as far as we know, the only other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wrap-up podcast Coulson and Friends.
Yes, and we say as far as we know because we've made absolutely no effort to look for any of them.
Though he claims he has looked and said we're the only two. So we have to trust him. Yes, yes, we have to trust him. So yeah, and he has been on a couple of our discussion podcasts. He was on a recent episode of Agents of Speak as well. And for those who have not been watching, you should be watching that Tuesdays after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Before the show's over, catch us on our last three episodes of the season. But here's a clip of Frank and us discussing an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And we have a special guest host with us tonight, and it is Frank Duran. Is that how you say your last name?
Yes, that is. It's like the band.
Okay, exactly. Yes.
Like the band.
And he is the host of Real Books Don't Have Batman, and he also does Coulson and Friends and wanted to hang out with us tonight on Hangouts, so here he is.
I'm excited to be talking with the only other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, because Coulson and Friends, and then I was looking online, I was like, there's got to be no other companion shows, and you guys were it.
That's awesome.
So I'm glad to be sitting down with you guys, and you guys were on my podcast, Crisis on Multiple Podcasts, last week, which was awesome. Thank you, guys.
That was a good time.
Thanks.
All right, so let's get right into it. I mean, kind of a lot happened in this episode.
I feel more satisfied with this episode than I did the last episode.
Really?
Yeah, I think a lot more, because I think they kind of, like, diddled around with the last episode, and it didn't really get anywhere other than they were like, and Coulson was brought back, and that was it. But, like, this had a lot more layers going on. We had the whole plot line with the S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy. There was also the Sky thing going on. There was a lot of layers to this to like.
There was. And then you had the whole Ian Quinn overarching, umbrella over that thing, almost, sort of.
Overarching arch enemy.
Yes. I love that they brought him back. I thought that was great. So.
Yeah, I kind of, to Frank's point, last week we were expecting, I think, to learn what happened to Coulson, and we really just got more questions and then we got answers. This week we got some answers about Sky, things we hadn't known yet.
You
got
a lot more questions.
You got a lot about Sky.
Yeah, more questions.
And bigger questions.
It wouldn't be a Whedon show if there wasn't more questions.
Perfect. Very true.
And then lastly, but certainly not least of our podcast friends, is Elie Schwab.
Good old Elie Schwab.
Good old Elie Schwab. Now, I actually, you meet people virtually through this, like Frank lives in Boston and Johnny lives in California. So we haven't actually physically met. We just talk online all the time. But Eli actually met because I met him through a mutual friend, working at a convention together and we hit it off right away. And, he's an interesting guy. He's a musician, artist, podcaster, and so he came on and talked about his book that he's working on, which is Cosmic Lion. Was it? It was Cosmic Lion was the book, and Cosmic Lion Radio is his podcast. So here he is talking a little bit about that.
The podcast. Is interesting too. Like, I listen to podcasts and they're usually just a conversation like this. But yours, you're playing music and then you're talking to people in between. It's kind of like a radio show, mini radio show.
Right.
Was that intentional or is that just kind of like,
I was definitely inspired by like college radio. I did a little bit of college radio when I was going to college in New Hampshire. And then again, when I was living in Vermont, I listened to WRUV up there and that's a lot of what they do there. So. I modeled it after that, and because, I love music, and I love to hear different kinds of music, and I was always that guy growing up that, had the CD burner and was burning, live bootlegs of bands for people and making mixtapes and stuff, so I love doing that, and so kind of like the new evolution of that for me was doing the podcast, and I just kind of like Like I said, I get off at midnight, but I stay up to like 3 or 4 in the morning every day working on my stuff, you know, working on the comic, mm-hmm. working on the podcast. And last night I was up so late working on my brand new 2-part Les Claypool Primus edition that I slept past our daytime.
Could you explain what that was? I have no idea what you just said.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't. Have you guys heard of Les Claypool or Primus, the band?
I've heard of Primus. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so the most recent Cosmic Line Radio that I've been tirelessly editing the last 2 days is I got to meet this guy named Toaster, who's been to like more Primus shows than anyone. He's got the most tapes, and he's got a website up called Toasterland where he streams all these different Primus and Les Claypool bootlegs. So I met up with him, and he picked all these little weird songs from the archives. And so this one is kind of like a super exclusive look into the archives of Primus and Les Claypool.
Yeah, that actually brings me to a question. Like, you have a lot of deep cuts on your radio show, you know, or your podcast. How do you come across some of them?
If you saw me right now, you would see that I am putting my fist into the air in exaltation because I love that, man. I love deep cuts. I love weird music. I'm just like a music seeker.
Ah, what a great clip that was.
I feel like I was there all over again.
Yes. You know, we need to stop drinking, guys. We've been celebrating too much.
But it's helped us this far.
That's true. Before we go on with any more clips, John.
Yes?
What do you feel, have you gotten anything out of the last year of doing this show?
Besides agita and heartburn.
And sleep deprivation?
Yes.
Nah, it's been very fulfilling. Especially the beatings, but, you know.
Now, can you say that without the sarcastic humor?
I don't think you can say anything without sarcastic humor.
No, I really can't. I'm genetically not capable of that.
That's why you're on the show. You add color to our lives.
That's not what you said when I wasn't around, but okay, sure. We'll go with that.
I know. Sorry. We're just blackmailing you with those pictures.
Yes. Personally, I have learned patience and humility.
Do tell.
Now we know you're reading from a script.
Patience and putting up with you two on a week-by-week basis. And humility that it could be much worse.
Yes, it could.
But in all seriousness, we did have some really serious conversations this past year. You know, talking about real social issues. It's
issues that strongly affect the nerd community.
They do.
So yes, I actually went earlier this year when Heroes of Cosplay came out. I noticed an explosion on the internet of people who just were not happy with that show. So I got a group of my friends together who were cosplayers, and we did a panel episode all about Heroes of Cosplay and just cosplay in general. And before you think, oh, it's just a bunch of nerds talking about cosplay, we actually addressed some very important issues. And one of the things that we talked about on that episode was sexism in cosplay and how, you know, women will wear skimpy outfits and get attention from people. But even ones that aren't even in skimpy outfits, they get negative attention and they get good attention. And I feel that most of the people on the panel had really good answers on this. So this clip's a little longer, but I think this was a really good answer. I think everyone should listen to this. So here we go.
For the drama, probably.
Yeah. Now, I know, speaking of that show and Yaya, and I know we're going to lose Tatiana soon, so I want to get this question in before she goes.
Okay.
Well, because this is something we need a woman's perspective on. One of the things that had come up on the show, and just in general, you know, there's a lot of sexuality around women in cosplay, and right. And in one of the episodes, I can't remember the character, the woman's name, the younger girl on the show who learned how to cosplay from Yaya was
Monica.
Going to Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Monica. Thank you. She was going to wear a costume that was sexy. She wore it anyway, and Yaya is telling her not to do it. And of course, Yaya wears a lot of revealing costumes. So in that respect, women who wear sexy costumes get a lot of attention at conventions, right? I mean, that's hands down. Everyone can agree to that. Some of it positive, a lot of it negative. Being the father of a 19-year-old girl, I know I don't appreciate any of the negative attention that they get. But there's also the argument on the other side that women invite it by dressing like that. I don't think that's true, but on one hand, you're going into a room full of a bunch of guys who don't get girls on a regular basis. So now to wear a skimpy Wonder Woman costume or Black Cat costume or anything like that, or Poison Ivy, you're going to draw attention. And you know, I guess, what are your feelings on it, Tatiana?
I guess, as you just said, it's of the opinion of some people that women invite that kind of attention by dressing like that. I would flip that on its head by saying that we never invited anyone to draw the characters that we love in such revealing costumes. Mm-hmm. That's something that, you know, that we never asked for, but we try to embody those characters by getting the costumes as accurate as we can because of a love of character, not necessarily for how the costumes were made. And that's just speaking from my personal experience. There is, on the other hand, the flip side of a lot of girls are boot babes at convention. Mm-hmm. And they'll get the negative attention because they were paid to dress up as a character. And people will talk to them and find out that they don't know anything about the character. And that's not their fault. But they're just doing a job at a convention. And, you know, there are so many factors that go into it that it's probably close to impossible to give a all-encompassing answer on that subject without stepping on somebody's toes or offending somebody. But personally, from my point of view, I dress as the characters I dress as because I appreciate their characters. And I appreciate the art that has brought them into being. So that's what I can personally say on that. So how about you, boys? What do we think about this?
Ooh, so many toes to step on. Where do I start?
I hate gender benders. That's all I'll say.
Oh, you hurt my heart.
I find this funny because David, you recently added me on Facebook, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I have an old folder on Facebook. If you find it, you'll come to realize I actually have cosplayed quite a few females.
Mm-hmm. I am looking up your Facebook as we speak, Sam.
I will add you later today. I will show you a photo. Nice. I have. So it's funny to me because I actually did this thing where for a full year, I only cross-played, which was basically just doing female characters. And it got me to kind of, I guess it was funny to me because I would go to events with my at the time my girlfriend, and she did some good work on me as far as the costume goes, and it really got me to open up my eyes to see it's like when women say, you know, you have to walk a mile in our shoes. I've walked a mile in your shoes, lady.
Well, the girlfriend fire said the sister aren't. She always wanted. That's the girlfriend fire said. The sister she always wanted.
So, you know, it's like Tatiana says, I mean, these characters, these women that are drawn in comic books, though, they're drawn a specific way with a specific costume. And, you know, as a cosplayer, you want to get your costume as accurate as possible because, you know, there's people that will come at you and say, oh, well, your costume wasn't accurate enough, or that's not how the character looks, because, well, you just might on your day say, well, I want to be modest and I want to cover up this part of my body, or I want to cover up my chest, or I want to, and they'll disapprove of your costume. You know, just because you do dress that way, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, and I can
Just because that they do dress that way does not mean, you know, hey, guys, this is an invitation for you to, you know, hold me a certain way when we take a picture or touch me on a certain spot when we take a picture, you know. It's just not, it's not right, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it's really, it could be just definitely that love of the cosplayer. You know, you want to get your costume accurate, but at the same time, it doesn't mean, hey, half of me is hanging out. Here's an invitation to smack all sides.
I honestly thought it was. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I have no say in this because when I'm in the bat suit, I wear glasses, so I don't see anything.
Blind as a bat.
Exactly. Salem has to tell me what's going on.
I'll do Daredevil either or.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is that way. You know, I feel a little bad on that part because I've hung out with a lot of really talented female cosplayers, and sometimes it's hard. It's hard to make friends with them because, you know, you might not be that guy that's or what they call the creepers. They call them creepers, right? You might not be that way, but because they've been so accustomed or used to dealing to guys like that, you know, they're constantly in a flight or fight mode, and it's a question of, well, can I trust this person? Can I not trust this person? You know, is it okay to hang out with this person? And you know, it's a little sad because you know, you get written off as one of those people that are, you know, just because. You know, just because you're a certain way, or just because everyone else is a certain way, you're going to get judged on that way because they've experienced it so much.
Give Batman a chance.
That's more than a little sad. I mean, honestly, that's really sad because cosplay as a community and conventions and geekdom and fandom is supposed to be this inclusive, safe place. And when women feel like that, who dress up in these costumes, as you put it, Salem, they're in this fight or flight mode when they constantly have to be on the defensive. That's really sad because it completely contradicts everything that really conventions were based around and that our, you know, a lot of our community really is based around, which is this inclusive spirit. And I don't know, to me, that's just a very sad state of affairs.
Very salient points.
Yes.
I definitely think that was a pivotal episode. We did some good work there in the world.
Yes. And then, of course, I think the most important issue we ever tackled on here.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
John,
yeah.
do you agree? Is this the most important issue? Yes. Batfleck.
We are the Mother Teresa of geeks tackling underdressed women.
Yes, the day. No,
I thought you were going to say Hans Zimmer, but okay.
No. There's plenty of Hans Zimmer coming up at the end of the episode. But the day that they announced that Ben Affleck was playing Batman, to deal with all of the hate and vile that was spitting out on the internet, we did a panel episode on that, and it kind of ended up with everyone agreeing to say, let's wait and see. So here's the wrap-up from that episode where we all kind of said, hey, let's wait and see.
And the only other name was, and it wasn't someone that they said, but Michael Rosenbaum came out and said he wanted to be Lex Luthor.
I want to see that. That I would love to see.
But he did it!
He did it.
And I'd like to see him do it again.
I don't think they'd give it to him.
Yeah.
No. He's a good Lex Luthor in Smallville.
He was. He was a great Lex Luthor.
For a different show, for a different time.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez, that should have been the topic. Anyway. All right. So, right. You know, and it's funny. I had I was saying earlier today that I don't know if they're going to go see this movie because of Ben Affleck, but, you know, my daughter talked to me and said, you know, at least wait till the trailer comes out to make that decision. So, you know, that's the boat I'm in right now. I'm going to wait for the trailers, which they're fast tracking it so much, probably will be out before we know it.
Right.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Next Comic-Con.
And you know he was the bomb in Phantoms.
He was the bomb in Phantoms, yo! It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I'll send you a link.
Oh, man. Yes.
Sorry, I just... And aside from the Phantoms bomb, I wanted to say, because you said you were thinking about not going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the first Transformers movie came out, and it's bad, I did go see it. And I think the one thing I realized afterwards is, at least within our lifetime, somebody put this on film.
Right.
Yeah.
So even if it's bad, and I don't think any of us think that it will be, we're kind of hoping optimistically it'll be great. Within our lifetime, Batman and Superman on the silver screen together, that, I mean, we live in the golden age.
You can't miss it. You have to go. Yeah. Like, I couldn't imagine staying home. Like,
right. Even if it's a train wreck, you have to watch it.
Exactly.
All right. So in summary, yes, we're all optimistic and hopeful it'll be a great movie. And Affleck, you have some reading to do. If you need any recommendations, talk to your good friend Kevin Smith over there.
Wasn't that great?
That was a good one. I like that. And you know, we'll wait and see how the verdict comes out on that one, I think.
Yeah, I think we're all still there.
Yes.
You know,
we only have to sit on the edge of our seats for another 2 years now?
A year and a half, right? Well, no, 2 years.
No, 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah, and there's so many other things they could mess up besides that in the movie, so, you know.
True.
You know, we don't know how
they're going to treat Wonder Woman. They have 2 years to mess those things up.
Yes.
We don't know how they're going to treat Wonder Woman yet, so.
Probably badly.
Yes, probably. Yeah. But even though we've had a lot of fun on this show and tackled nerd issues, we have tackled some, I wouldn't say we've tackled real issues, but we've had people on the podcast who are doing some good out in the world.
We've been a voice box for some real issues in the world.
Yes. So we're going to talk about clips from three of my all-time favorite episodes. And the first one was Michael Whitehead, for Comics for Kids, which is a charity that, people donate old comic books to, and they redistributed them to, underprivileged kids to encourage reading. And, it's a great charity and people should go and support it. But don't take my word for it. Here's Michael talking about it himself.
Who are you distributing them to? And like, do you have any success stories? Have any kids come up and, you know, send anything to you after they've gotten some comics from you?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that because I'm very new to doing stuff like this. So I get sidetracked a lot, especially talking about comics.
Well, it's easy, especially,
it's very easy. Well, the first thing that I did is I just, you know, just basically just started giving kids that I knew don't have. I don't know if you're familiar with the state of Mississippi, but we are the absolute poorest state out of all 50. Mm-hmm. I would say the last census that I checked out, roughly 60% of our state lives below the poverty level. Probably, I think it was over half our population does not have internet. Most of them don't have cell phones. So when I talk about giving books to kids, I'm giving books to children that don't have internet access. They don't have video games.
Right.
They don't have things that most children, you know, just take for granted. So during the summer, children in the poorer states, you know, comic books might be the only form of entertainment that they have that's able to keep them out of trouble, that's able to keep their minds going. And I mean, it's just, it, you know, when they say reading is fundamental, if it hadn't have been for comic books, there is no telling how much trouble I would have gotten into as a teenager. Yeah. I think one of the reasons that I founded Comics for Kids is I got to thinking back to a lot of my high school friends, and every person that I used to be friends with that reads comics is a highly functional. I don't know the best way to say this, but they are an asset to society. Uh-huh. They are people that, you know, have families, have jobs, that productive society. There we go, productive members of society. And I think back to a lot of my friends that made fun of me for reading comic books, who, you know, used to pick on me for stuff like that, and a lot of those people are not. And, you know, and that's not saying that kids that read comics are better than anybody else. It's just kids that read comics have better imaginations. They're not as easily bored. They're not susceptible to a lot of the things that are out there. I know I have never, I'm 37 years old, I have never had a drink of alcohol. I have never done any type of drug. I've never smoked a cigarette. And not saying that people do those things that are wrong, but growing up, I read comic books from the 70s and 60s, and a lot of those comic books had moral lessons that they taught children. They taught us that we didn't have to... Spider-Man always said don't do drugs. He punched people who sold drugs right in the face. And that's just the way that comics helped me. I didn't have someone in my life telling me, you don't need to do this, you don't need to do that. I had, well, I'm not saying my parents were bad or anything like that, but they, you know, they just didn't tell me stuff like that because I already knew not to do that from the stuff that I watched. I remember watching the Super Friends, and these two kids were smoking, I think it was dope. I guess it was marijuana. They were passing it back and forth, and Superman flew out of the sky and took it away from them and threw it down and like melted it with his heat vision. And he looked, pointed his finger right at the screen. And he's like, "Only fools do drugs," and that just stuck with me.
Right.
And I tried to get, you know, comics today, they don't really teach moral lessons and stuff, but you know it. If you can put a book into a child's hand and they'll read it, you're doing good. Because kids, they just don't read like they used to. There's just so much other things out there that grabs their attention. And I just try to put as many books into kids' hands as I possibly can. Yeah. So far, we've given away over 3,000 comics.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. One of the, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
you asked a success story.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a little video that I post to Twitter all the time of a young man who I met last summer. I interviewed him, and he talked. He was so, it was like talking to an adult. He was just sharp. He wrote me a letter wanting to know could he get more X-Force comic books. And when I'm not talking the new X-Force, I'm talking the X-Force from the 90s that I used to read when I was a teenager.
Right.
I sent that to Rob Liefeld, and he thought that was just awesome. I got a little video of the kid saying Rob Liefeld is the bomb, and he thought that was pretty cool.
You know, it really makes me wish I had a bunch of old comics to donate right now.
Yes, I know, because you went digital.
I did go digital. It's the way to go. It's the way of the future.
No.
But you know what also is the way of the future? Being more inclusive in our comic book heroes.
Yes. Yes. Like, possibly including comic book heroes who have disabilities.
Absolutely.
Yes. Like, ooh, let's say autism.
As long as it's not depicted in a comic way, such as the urchin.
No, no, no. Mm. There is another great interview that we did with the founders of Face Value Comics, who it started out as an art project to help kids with autism learn how to read facial expressions, and grew into a comic book all about a hero with autism. And let's let them tell you about their book.
So, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Face Value Comics?
Sure. Face Value Comics is the first comic book to feature a superhero reminiscent of the golden age of comic books, and he's the first hero to have autism. It is a line that we have geared for kids, middle school kids, with the intent and purpose to give kids with autism a hero like themselves. And we want to be able to teach some emotional skills, some coping skills, and better communication, not just for kids on the spectrum, but for all readers. We decided to follow the antiquated comic book code authority to make a family-friendly piece of entertainment that would also be educational.
That's actually a great cause. I don't think it's... Personally, I don't think it's antiquated, the comics code, in the sense of... I know many people my generation who missed the golden age. You know, the hero is the good guy. You know, right. there's no gray lines. There's no, is he the good guy? There's no anti-heroes. You know, Superman was truth, justice in the American way. And you knew that when you read the book, you know. So saying it's antiquated, I think, you know, there's still people who long for that. But I have to ask, you chose autism, as your platform, is that because you know someone who's autistic, or is it just the cause you believe in?
A little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. I had a lot of clients as a professional therapist who were on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. and that actually started the genesis of what would become Face Value Comics. One of the skills that I had acquired through my PhD research was understanding better communication techniques for people with autism, and some research that I had worked on now, I guess, 3 years ago, started working on facial feature recognition. And that's the premise that the face and muscles contort in a certain kind of universal way mm-hmm. whenever a person has certain core feelings like anger, sadness, or even happiness, and that those expressions could have names and could be easily identified. A lot of people on the autism spectrum have difficulties navigating some social situations, so having a way, a reference to help understand what another person might be feeling helps build empathy. And as a therapist, what I was doing was drawing a lot, and sadly, if you knew any quality of my artwork, you would find that that might be problematic. But I would have other kids... just even copy with a circle and smiling face, or an angry face with even some jagged eyebrows and things of that nature to indicate that they kind of got what these general emotions were, and they demonstrated some success. Part of my job as a therapist was trying to gauge and show performance enhancement, acquisition, and use of certain social skills, and found that there was a marked improvement. What I was doing was reinventing the wheel each time with a new client, a new sheet of paper, and a new drawing, and just doing that again and again. While the overall effect was useful, I found myself wasting a lot of paper, and I thought it'd be neat if I could collect these into a binder and have them done maybe even professionally. But the idea of facial feature recognition is that we're able to pause, like a snapshot, to freeze frame an emotional expression on a static page that a person could go back and reference again and again, that they could look at it, try to understand it, and then trying to put it into context. I had kids tell me their own social stories that would kind of match an expression, but found it sometimes it was a little bit beyond them. They couldn't think creatively on the spot, so I ended up making some stories and generalizations to help them to get started. And I thought this would be kind of neat to put in a comic book, that would be a three-tiered approach. That's when my more academic mind started kicking in and thinking, all right, phase one is showing the facial expression. Part two is putting a thought bubble or speech bubble to give the emotion language for a person to actually say, I'm angry or I'm sad. And then captions help place the entire situation in context, that a person could, again, go back and back forth to see the story and understand it, and we just happen to use a fun science fiction steampunk storyline to help make it more entertaining. But the core values of the facial expressions and the expressed language for the emotions are in the heart of the story.
You're doing the good work in the world there, Dave.
We try here. We really do. Hey, we mentioned Frank earlier, right?
We did.
Yes. And you know, and there was another great episode that he co-hosted on.
Bastard trying to be a scab in our team here. Oh, well, wait, we like him. Never mind.
Well, it worked out because it happened to be a filmmaker that we had on the show. Yes. And And Frank is a film student, for those who don't know. And I was really proud of this get because I had heard this person on Kevin Smith's podcast, Fat Man on Batman, and I emailed him and thought, he's never going to reply. And he's like, oh, sure, I'll do it. So the filmmaker behind Legends of the Night, a documentary about the power of storytelling.
About Batman.
Or as John would say, the... Come on, John, it's your cue. The God...
Well, that's just... That's what you say. It's the goddamn Batman.
There you go.
That's right. I am Batman.
But it's a very powerful movie. I've seen the previews for it. Unfortunately, I have not seen it yet. And he is using the movie as a way to... the way it's being distributed is being used to raise money for other charities, but...
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That he's doing that, basically throwing away any proceeds that he would normally bring in for the movie and for his work, just to help out these same people that he went out and talked to, you know, through the world. And that's, what more could you ask for in humanity?
Right.
Brilliant.
So let's hear him talk about that a little bit.
Very cool. Now, how are you guys bringing this around the country? How will people be able to see Legends of the Night?
Yeah, we've done this really unique thing. First of all, I mean, every piece of this film, the tagline for this film, Legends of the Night, is "We are Batman." And so, you know, we wanted to bring that "We are Batman" spirit to every piece of this. So the film's message is this message of, you know, we have the ability to bring that Batman spirit into the world. And the way this movie was created has a very Batman spirit to it in terms of, I mean, literally over 1,100 people contributed funding via Kickstarter and Indiegogo for this movie to happen. So there was definitely that kind of spirit and giving heroic spirit. But then we wanted to create something like that for the distribution process. You know, the normal way that you work on distribution is you go to the film festivals and you try to stir up buzz and try to get a distributor, but the world is changing, and even that, pursuing all that, and, you know, we had the discussions with the film agents and all that, and I just never felt right about it, because the biggest goal of all that is, well, how can we monetize it, and how can we generate revenue, and all of that, and I totally get it, because if you're going to invest marketing dollars and publicity dollars and all of that, it's got to be for a purpose. I understand all that. But that, a lot of that didn't feel right to me, particularly as the initial way to release it into the world. So what we've done instead is we've partnered with a company called Tugg.com. That's Tugg.com. And what we've done is we've created this unique partnership where anyone in the U.S. can request a screening of Legends of the Night at their local theater. You go to our website, wearebatman.com. You click to request a screening. And then you fill out a request form, and when you do that, you put in your zip code, and it pulls up all the partner theaters that we have connections with that are in your zip code. And then you pick the theater, you give them a couple options on dates, and then Tug, essentially, through their connections, they make the connections, they get the screening scheduled, they handle all the logistics technically, and the theater goes up, the screening goes up online. It goes up on Tug's website, we put it on our website, and then people have the ability to buy tickets. And what's awesome about it is, then the way we've set it up is that whoever requests the screening, you get to choose, and the revenues that would have come to our studio will instead go to the charity of your choice. So essentially you're having a night where everyone that buys a ticket gets to be Bruce Wayne, because proceeds from the event are going to go to a local charity. And so it's got the Batman spirit all over it.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm going to need a minute. I'm a little choked up over that last one.
You're a little verklempt.
A little bit. But no, that was a great interview. I really enjoyed. I've really enjoyed listening to that one amongst most of the ones we had, because I do actually listen to our show. And
I would
not
hope
trying
so.
To comment on anyone else here. Just saying.
That was subtle. That was really subtle.
And that one I actually really enjoyed listening to, both because it was an interesting topic, and Frank was really engaging in asking questions about the process and things like that.
It's because Frank was on the episode.
Exactly. That's what made it interesting.
Thanks a lot.
There, I insulted everyone in that one.
That's life in my heart.
Nice.
So before we get into some of our favorite clips.
Oh yes.
We know it's coming, folks. Strap in. Or strap on.
No, bad.
No.
We like to be at least close to kid friendly.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Approximately. In the neighborhood.
It's a clip episode. The kids aren't listening.
Well, that's not the point.
It's a clip episode. Nobody's listening, but you still gotta, you know, go through the motion of being nice and.
Right. Don't want to get flagged on iTunes. Anyway. No. Go on.
Go on.
I want to say a big thank you to you two gentlemen, for taking this journey
There's
with
other
me.
People on the show right now?
To you, Ben and John, for, you know, agreeing to do this and taking this journey with me this last year.
Again, I didn't agree. I'm being forced. Somebody help me.
And you know, you don't have to thank me. The huge paycheck that you've been giving me is thanks enough.
Wait a minute, you get paid?
Oh wait, I'm sorry. Hell? I forgot I wasn't supposed to say that. Damn. Again.
You know, do you see what I'm working with here, people?
I meant the accolades, all the accolades from the fans. You know, the hundreds of emails that I get every day is thanks enough.
Yes. Hundreds?
Fan mail too?
Well, remember.
Damn, I was not supposed to say that either.
Remember, we said in the very beginning he would get all the female email.
I am just doing everything wrong, aren't I?
Yes. Yes.
It's all in the beard.
That's what I'm missing.
Yeah, see? So grow a beard, John, and
somehow I think that...
And it'll translate on the radio, I don't know.
If you grow more than one, grow a pair.
Wait, who's skirting the line of...
Beards.
Who's skirting the line of children friendly now?
No one at all.
Damn.
So.
So anyway, yes, I just wanted to say thank you. But we're going to come back, we're going to play a group of clips now. Which are some of our favorite episodes, or my favorite episodes, some of our favorite moments over the past year. So sit back and enjoy this, and we'll be back in a minute.
Simmer.
He's like writing a lot of things now.
Yes, but there's a huge difference between him and Williams. There's no comparison.
Is he the one that did the Amazing Spider-Man as well?
I think so. He did a lot. He did Kung Fu Panda, and let's see.
We're actually recording.
Is it going to be part of the show?
We can make it part of the show. We can have an official start.
And so here's our show today.
We can go, hey, welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
Ben.
John.
There you go. Now it's officially started. Does it feel better? Does it feel more official?
Well, I just wasn't sure what we were talking about. He just was randomly...
Well, we're talking about composers for movies.
Yeah.
And I agree that Zimmer's not bad, but he's no Williams. But
yeah,
who was Williams?
Today's topic is Hans Zimmer, most evil man on the planet, or Hitler?
I'm not sure I could categorize him as either, per se.
Antichrist or Hitler. Yeah, I mean, I say it jokingly, but still, it's just there are a couple of YouTube recomposed trailers for Man of Steel that use the original Williams music, and just maybe it's hard to dissociate myself with having seen the original Superman in 78 and all that and being able to remember it because I'm old, but it's still. Seems to get your blood flowing a hell of a lot better than the current music that you hear in these trailers.
I think the problem is, and maybe you realize this, you're fanboying.
No. A fanboy?
John, do you have any questions about the convention since you were unable to attend?
Well, considering I'm the exposition foil here.
Know your place.
Thank you, sir. I don't even need to pay for this.
Let's see. Okay, dead air.
You could have at least cut out
dead air. Hey everyone, this is Dave from Superhero Speak. I'm here with Tony Isabella, creator of Black Lightning. We're at the East Coast Black Age Comic Book Convention 2013. Say hello to the folks, Tony.
Hi, folks.
How's the convention going for you so far?
This convention is one of my favorites. It is unlike any other convention around. You'll notice there are no standard comics retailers here.
Yes.
These are all creative people selling their work, networking with each other. It's more a community than a convention.
Yeah, I was at the Glyph Awards last night, and good. I just got that feeling just from that.
Yeah. It's a community that's been very supportive of my work and myself, and I just love these folks to pieces.
Yes. So, can you tell us, where did the inspiration for Black Lightning come? Like, how did he come about?
Well, the earliest inspiration is that I had a lot of black friends who were comic book fans, and there weren't really a lot of black heroes for them to read about.
Okay.
I did some work at Marvel on characters like Luke Cage and the Living Mummy.
Right.
But Luke Cage was an ex-convict, and the Living Mummy was an ex-king and mummified to boot.
Right.
It wasn't really what I was looking for. And then DC Comics asked me to create a character for them. It was a partnership agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, okay, what could every reader relate to? And my next big inspiration came from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Okay.
What if I created a superhero who was a teacher, had some sort of success outside of teaching, and now is back in his old neighborhood teaching again? So I created the character of Jeff Pierce first.
Okay.
And then once I was satisfied with him, that I had a great, interesting character, then I added all the superhero stuff to it.
John?
Yes?
Have you ever gotten over your hatred of Hans Zimmer?
Well, let me put it this way.
He's not dead yet, so.
Let me put it this way. A couple of days ago, they started playing The Man of Steel on HBO for free, and they had nothing to do, sat down, turned it on, watched it through. No, I still hate Hans Zimmer. And now I'm even more upset, because now the movie seems, when you go through the movie again, it seems even more disjointed.
Yeah.
Really now?
And I'm blaming that on Hans Zimmer, too.
You know, maybe on the anniversary of our Man of Steel episode, we should re-review Man of Steel.
It does not hold.
No. We're just going to review the soundtrack.
Okay.
Well, that'll take all of a minute.
Oh.
Just play O Fortuna and bury it. You know, that's it.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as I thanked my co-hosts for doing this with me, I thank all of you that are listening.
And we thank you as well. And we thank Dave as well for insistently nagging us to do this until we gave in. So.
Yes, through text and email.
Carrier pigeon.
Phone calls and more phone calls. And text at 3 a.m.
Look.
What we're saying is Dave is very persistent.
Wait. Yes. Just because I drunk text you once in a while doesn't mean you have to talk about it on air. Yes.
It's so much fun.
So, something I want to, you know, mention before we go here is, so in the year that we've been on the air, we've grown quite a bit. You know, we've
for
had
three followers.
We've not actually. We've actually had over 30,000 downloads of our show.
Nice.
We currently have...
I swear, I only did like 10,000 of those.
I think John did another 10.
I doubt that.
Oh, okay. That's right, he doesn't listen. we have over 1,500 followers on Twitter. And we have a great audience on Twitter. Got a lot of feedback on Twitter and a lot of conversations with the fans, especially when we're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We tweet things out and you guys respond. I love that stuff.
It is literally the only thing I use Twitter for.
Yes. We have over,
this is obvious in my feed.
Currently we have over 370 Facebook likes. So if you're one of our Twitter followers and you have a Facebook, jump on over and hit that like button. But yes, no, thank you for all those likes. And for our YouTube show, Agents of Speak, we have over 1,300 views on that. So, you know, we know you what?
I mean, thank you. Thank you for that.
So we know you guys are out there watching and listening, and we appreciate it very much. So we thank you for that from the bottom of our hearts. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, as always, oh, wait, why don't we just play some of the best clips of that to go out on?
Well, I wouldn't say the best clips, just the clips of that.
All right. So here's some clips. Oh, but before we get that, I'm going to probably change it now to join the conversation. So, just as
finally?
Finally, after a year. No. So anyway, thanks for listening, and have a good week.
Well, on that note, I'll sign off for now. Okay. And I don't know. We need a sign off. I'm going to stick with what I've been using, and you guys can argue about it later.
Okay.
So don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Until next time, don't get your cape caught on the door. So the Dark Knight, nobody. He has a cape too, right?
I see how you guys care about other people that, you know.
I'm just saying, as a Dark Knight, he has to be careful with that cape. He doesn't want to get it caught in any doors.
Oh, nice. I don't think Dave was impressed.
The Segway King again.
Segway King strikes again.
Go to that movie or we'll do more segways.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
So
if you'd like to put an end to our segwaying ways.
So stay tuned for the details. And we'll know. We'll let you know as soon as we know. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, don't let your Segway get a flat tire. Have a good week.
Oh, ooh.
And for now, I will just say, as I always do, don't let your cape get caught in the door.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+, at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.